propaganda.
Industrial complex. A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody. Happy Mother's Day, May 13th, 2007.
We talked to our moms today. They're both having a great day, and I hope your mom is too. And if you're a mom, hope you're having an especially happy day, too.
I hope you have a spectacular day. And you got to relax, and you're still getting to relax, because I sure got to. I get treated like a queen here at Shaggy.
Now, she says that, and she still got up and did some cooking today. And,
I didn't mind.
Well, and she did some marvelous stuff with some of the leftovers from the barbecue contest.
Barbecue contest. Yeah. You'll have to write a little column about that. Yeah.
I'm now a certified barbecue
judge.
By
the way, I get email that you owe people a Rattling the Cage article.
Ah, you're right. I am remiss, so I will work on that.
By the way, not only is today Mother's Day, but we also have to mention today's the 400th anniversary of the Jamestown Colony founding.
Yes, that's the reason that the Queen came over to celebrate.
Hey-o.
Yes, that and to watch the horses at Churchill Downs. But, that is an interesting story and one that has more history behind it than we normally get in schools.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got limited time here on the front end and back end of
the... We do because we're bringing you a wonderful classic PID episode today. That is an interview we did. Was it last year?
This would have been in the winter of 2005, November of 2005. So we're going deep into the archives.
That's going back to the Stone Age of PID Radio.
And this was one of the interviews that we still recorded through the digital video camera. Our sort of jury-rigged system that, praise God, worked fine.
Praise God.
And Russ Dizdar is finally getting close to releasing the book, The Black Awakening, that he's been working on for quite some time. And we consider this to be good foundational information from a guy who encounters the forces of darkness, the angelic beings that have rebelled against God directly on a very personal level, more personally, frankly, than I'd ever want to. So without further ado, we go now to the PID Radio Archives and Russ Dizdar.
We're pleased to welcome back to the bunker Russ Dizdar of Shatter the Darkness Ministries and the author of a forthcoming book called The Black Awakening. Russ, thanks again for joining us on PID Radio.
It's a great joy to be with you guys again. Appreciate it.
Russ, every time we have you on, we get all kinds of email. You say you get emails whenever you're on radio programs. What do you think that there's just a huge interest in it? Is there more activity going on now? What do you think's going on?
Well, I think that our culture is, you know, for the last, I think even from the 60s, but especially in the last number of years, is just inundated with end time issues and conspiracy issues. It's one of the hottest topics in the area of radio and podcasts, and look at the films that are out. So if we read culture and if we read the cries of and the discussion boards and everything else, we're seeing that we're touching on the very things that they're concerned about, worried about, and maybe even involved with. And they're finding somebody out there like you guys that understands them and can maybe offer some kind of help or insight.
Mm.
There have been some things in the news that really caught our attention, and we'll start with what's going on in Pennsylvania. One of the cases, it's been high profile, but they've not talked about an occult connection. But just the actions of the young man are so bizarre that we wonder if there isn't a connection there. David Ludwig and Kara Borden, the 18-year-old boy, of course, who killed his girlfriend's parents.
Right.
And by all accounts, seemed to be an upstanding, dependable, Christian young man.
Yeah, Russ, I don't know how much you've had a chance to take a peek at this, but he's got a couple of blog sites that I honestly don't know today if they're still up or not, but he posted some entries there that sound like the neatest Christian wholesome guy from any, you know, fundamental church. And he and a friend were even renovating the barn on the Ludwig property to be a meeting house for all of their Christian friends. they wanted it to be a place where they honored God, honored Jesus Christ. I mean, he used language that sounded like a fabulous walk-in-the-walk Christian man, and yet he turns around and does something like this. Does that surprise you?
Well, it surprises me, yeah. I mean, if a real Christian just... Oops, there we go. A real Christian would not, you know, be involved in just... It's too far of a whack out.
Well, and that's the question. Is he just pretending? Or are there more than one personality?
Well, and see, that's a possibility, because PA, and that's why a lot of people that are listening to you guys and they're hearing information about PA, I think the more we say the word PA or Pennsylvania, it's a great state as far as beauty, but it's littered with 55 years of the Brotherhood, the satanic stuff. Those who've raised their children and grandchildren have been around it. So you have a lot of those chosen ones that have come from there that are in churches, that are in places, even in aspects of ministry, but they have another side to them. And it comes out. And everything I've read so far concerning this fella, I can't say that I have any facts on him yet. But remember, again, law enforcement is trained to cover religious issues, bizarre religious issues, satanic stuff, so that there's no panic in the community.
Mm-hmm. To avoid it. And what really caught our attention, not only the bizarre nature of the crime, but the fact that he came from the same town, Lititz, Pennsylvania, as Rose Gray, who's the woman who filed the lawsuit against her psychiatrist after working with him for 10 years to recover memories of satanic ritual abuse. And after 10 years of this and recovering these memories, she determined that the memories were false, had been implanted by her psychiatrist, and won a judgment. At the last week of October, she won something like $330,000 in the judgment against her psychiatrist.
Right.
And, again, Lititz, Pennsylvania is a town of 9,000 people.
Right. Well, we're going to travel there. We're going to take a team in and travel there, and we have one scheduled for Grove, PA, coming up in about a week and a half. And we're going to do some prayer mapping of the area, because we have folks, you know, other chosen ones that have come out of Lancaster. We have one that was at Fuller Seminary under Dr. Charles Kraft and wasn't totally healed yet either. But like this woman who had all the memories, again, when handlers in the covens get them back, they'll either trigger a personality that's considered, or we call it a denial personality, a personality that can come up and, just literally run circles as far as denying everything. It is so easy for them, when they do get them back, to trigger them or to reconfigure them on the inside. How anybody can come in and have all these memories, because I've dealt with a lot of psychiatrists and psychologists in this whole field, and it's tough when you get into the courts because of switches that can occur, especially if they're triggered. But how could she have all these memories? I mean, how could you really? I mean, really, I've been counseling for, you know, 28 years and 20 years in this field. How do you implant false memories in them to tell them they have all these things going on? Then they come out of it and say they never had any of them. I guess for us, we always try to track down physical places, individuals, people. We always like to seek to verify the information on a physical level.
Right.
So it's tough. I mean, but I would guess right now, from what I do know from MO and stuff of these folks, is that she just simply has been switched to another personality, another part of her, and that she's being handled well by the sophisticated, you know, coven, mind control type coven. And of course, the doctor's losing out on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you said a few minutes ago that for the last 55 years, the Pennsylvania's had a lot of this going on. Can you, I think Derek and I know what you're talking about. Can you explain to our listeners why you, 55 years, what happened 55 years ago?
Sure. I mean, after the war, you got to remember the military had internment camps throughout Pennsylvania. And the so-called Pennsylvania Dutch, which were German-speaking. There were a lot of folks from Germany there. There were a lot of internment camps. What they did with the ex-Nazis back in those early 50s and into the 40s, early 50s, was to release them. and change their names, everything else. If you go throughout the history of Pennsylvania, you're going to find a lot of Germanic, German folks, and there's a lot of good folks. It's not just that, it's not the German people per se. It's the Nazi occultism that it came over also that was planted there. So out of the 100 multiple, I can name, 100 of the case files. All have either come directly out of Pennsylvania or been in Pennsylvania long term. And Pennsylvania is broken down into four quadrants with this group called the Ancient Brotherhood that oversees. So they have been creating chosen ones. That's why there's so many of them. They've been doing it for 50 years plus there in Pennsylvania, pumping them out in other parts of the country, networking, with other places. And so we have found just a host of victims. The sad thing is that it's still going on. They're still taking little kids and doing the exact same thing. Just because we're finding people in their 40s and 50s, and there may be thousands from the PA, Pennsylvania as a whole. Every city we've been in, we have people from the Satanic Brotherhood and satanic ritual abuse and the mind control concept. They're just flowing out of the area, and it's because all of what was put in there and who came there and how they hid in the mountains and places. And that's what we sought for years, too. We were wondering why, until we were taken there, and we dug up bones there, and we brought them back, and we went to ritual sites.
Dug up human bones?
Well, we brought them back, and they took them to the police officer here at University of Akron took them to a bone specialist at Kent State. He determined that the ones that we brought, and especially the fragments of the skull, was not human, but they were surgically cut, like with a triangle, a power cone in the top of the head, used in rituals and so forth. And so they used them in their police academy as teaching, showing the individuals. But in the site that we were at, there were dozens of other places to dig up. We have just never been back there because of the trouble that it caused.
How did you know where to dig?
Well, we took a chosen one. That one came out of the CIA, one that was raised in PA, one that spoke five languages, one that was very, very satanically powerful in the beginning when we first met them. And we had to be very careful. We took piggybackers with us. That means we took people that watched us, but the chosen one that took us there didn't know. Because we don't know if we're being led into something and being trapped. So they took us to a number of sites, and we took numerous pictures, and they turned over a lot of information. A lot of victims do have information. If you work with them long enough and the inside personalities that want out, they will take you to lockers, they will take you to storage bins, they will take you to deep wooded areas, but you've got to be careful. Because there's been a number of times that it was clearly just simply a setup too.
So now you mentioned the implanting of false memories, and of course there is a group out there devoted to promoting the idea that memories can be implanted, the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, which, as we've done some research on that group, discovered that some of the scientists who were involved with the original MK Ultra project for the CIA were part of setting up the foundation, as is the amazing Randy.
Mm-hmm.
We discovered he sits on their board. And
he wasn't with MK Ultra.
He's on the advisory board,
yeah.
Right, for the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, which may be why he took notice of us and the interviews that we've done. That relates to this story coming out of California now. Attorney Richard Hamlin, who's on trial in Sacramento County for spousal abuse, torture, child endangerment, unlawful discharge or reckless discharge of a handgun, 18 counts in all, he could face life in prison. A very bizarre story. Apparently, about a year ago, a year and a half ago, he went to the police with his wife Susan, who's also an attorney. Told the police a very strange story. Susan had begun to recover memories of abuse at the hands of her father, a gentleman named Dr. Sidney Seymour, S-I-E-M-E-R. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but the allegations that they made against Susan's father were that he was the head of a satanic cult and that they were planning to kill Richard Hamlin as part of a ritual that would lead to Susan being elevated to the position of high priestess of their cult group. Out of the woodwork came a CIA operative by the name of Michael Reconosciuto, who's been, you know, in, on the radar of conspiracy theorists for years, who placed Dr. Seamer at the Cabazon Indian Reservation in the early 80s, working on a biological weapons project at Indio, California. Now, that's significant because Sherry Seymour, who's written a manuscript that's available online, we've talked about it in the last couple days, called The Last Circle, mentioned something about a gentleman named Robert Booth Nichols, CIA operative, that was important. Nichols and his inner circle, who were kind of the leaders of this group, this joint venture with the Wackenhut Corporation to produce these biologicals, called themselves Chosen Ones and had a strong interest in the occultism of the SS, the Nazis.
And they wore skull and crossbones.
And they wore skull and crossbones rings. So we're looking at a CIA involvement in this project there back in the early 80s, which ties into the whole Nazi occult, which again goes back to the Operation Paperclip Scientists, World War II, going back 55 years. Is this, and again, we're seeing this on the other side of the country, California, instead of in Pennsylvania. Is this jiving? I mean, is this, the reason that Richard Hamlin is on trial, by the way, is that his wife, like 2 days later, recanted her story and said that she was intimidated by her husband and that it was all a pack of lies, and so the police arrested him instead of arresting her father. Have you been following this story at all? And
Yeah, I've read, and I even wrote to Richard, and I have not got a reply. I just wrote some information and asked if there's a way we can help and give any insight stuff. So it was a current email address, but I have not yet got anything back. Again, looking at the case like that, here's again what we're going to say. If we estimate still around 10 million of these chosen ones have been created, developed over the last 50 years or 55 years, that means that they've had handlers and places. Now, most of the military chosen ones, and they're all connected to the old German Nazi occultism, the whole issue of the bloodline to the Aryans and the power of a transmuted or new human being. They're all into that. But when it comes to the Black Awakening, they also need the tools that are going to bring society down in the future. So, for example, the one out of Fort Bragg that was CIA, that was one of the most sophisticated and powerful and knowledgeable ones we've ever met, and dealt with this person for 7 years, and still care about them, still pray for them, but they carried around a little thing around their neck, a little vial, some kind of poison, whatever. She said, all she has to do is open it and scratch me with it, and I'm dead. She also talked about numerous things, including anthrax, and some of the things that they will use in the Black Awakening to create the chaos and to get rid of numerous people. We got to realize there's some really bad folks, and the whole side of Satan himself, he's not a stupid, you know, red thing with horns. He's an intelligence that uses individuals in sophisticated ways. So I would say that the story I've read with Richard and his wife, again, you may have a case, not that I work with her directly. I would like to work with them directly because we can find out whether it's for real or not. So it may be a case, again, of recanting. I've read the story about how she was, you know, out there and gotten beaten in the face by another guy, and and the whole story of him now being on the one side, again, trying to be a real strong Christian, and that he was going to be a Christian trophy, but then the allegations that he's the one that did all the harm and stuff. So public information may not come out concerning the sophisticated side of being a chosen one. Law enforcement and even the FBI that we've dealt with do not have the tools to dig into, you know, to find. I mean, they could find some of the stuff, you know, just the trace evidence issues. But Derek Sherrin, is still a spiritual thing. We have, as we pray and pray prayer map, that's what helps uncover and break through the layers, because there's demonic energizing that goes on with the secrecy. And the secret power of lawlessness, 2 Thessalonians 2, it's about a secrecy that's empowered demonically to keep things hidden till that day. And so we have to peer through that darkness with authority and realize that God, who soon crushed Satan under the feet of the Christians in Rome, an entire empire, he crushed that. We got to trust in the power of God to break into these cases. So when you gave me information a little bit about this, we've already been hitting it prayer map wise because we see that in that more will break through and we'll get more information.
Mm-hmm.
And but notice the spots. What's happening is you're looking out there. More and more, you're going to find more and more pieces of these chosen ones, their handlers, and everybody else coming out of the woodworks.
Yeah, and there may be some information that's coming out. A reporter out there named Virginia McCullough, who's been chronicling this case, has reported that individuals who wish to remain anonymous have advised her that Dr. Seamer was or is a member of the Order of the Trapezoid.
Sure.
Which is part of the Temple of Set.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wasn't...
With Mikey, huh?
Michael Aquino.
Yeah.
Right. I was not... And, of course, Aquino was out in California and has been... Well, he's been everywhere, man, like the song says. And he keeps turning up in places where cases like this pop up, Omaha at Offutt Air Force Base, and so forth. And we're making no allegations. We're just saying that, you know, these are facts that have been reported in the news that he's been present or been, you know, placed in these locations at the time that things have come into the news. It will take reporters like Virginia McCullough, like, you know, Sherry Seymour, and like the late Danny Casolaro, who are courageous enough to bring such information to light. It cost Danny Casolaro his life.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
And individuals like yourself, Russ, who are, you know, getting on the front line, you and the people who work with you to engage the enemy face to face.
Yeah.
And you know, those who are listening to us need to keep Russ and the Shatter the Darkness ministry. And there are other deliverance ministries out there as well. Not many, not nearly enough, but who need your prayer as well.
Russ, you said a few minutes ago that there were 10 million chosen ones. How did you come up with that number?
Well, when we started in the 90s, when we had a lot of them that we were dealing with directly, and then we began to deal with psychiatrists and psychologists. When we dealt with Holly Hector, that used to be in Youth for Christ years ago, she was a hypnotherapist at Denver Centennial Hospital. They had a ritual abuse ward. There was a book put out called Satan Associates by the last name of the guy was Amstutz. He had recorded her information from the American Psychological Association, whatever the statistics back then were 2.5 million. This is the very early 90s of diagnosed cases of multiple personality disorder. Now, almost every psychiatric ward and counselors galore across the country, all these people were showing up. 2.5 million diagnosed cases. Well, then the numbers continue to build. Then, of course, the psychologists and those folks change the information, calling them DID in the DSM-4 later, which is very obscure. It doesn't even scratch the surface of who these people really are. Now, from their own statistics, they're saying up to around 5 million diagnosed cases of DID, dissociative identity disorder, which is the old multiple personality disorder. Now, with Holly, though, she recorded in the book and over the phone with me that around 90% of those are satanic ritual abuse. Out of the thousands of hours in 20 years of all the people that we've dealt with, these chosen ones, these multiples and so forth, we have found that 99% of them, once we break through on a spiritual level and get down to the inside of them, they're all, 99% of them all had satanic ritual abuse.
Wow. Mm.
But half or more than half of the people that we've dealt with and spent hours upon hours, again, we're talking thousands of hours, more than half of them have never been in a psych ward yet. So I think around 94, we did a number of seminars out in the public. And that's when I began to say, listen, if there's close to 5 million diagnosed cases, and half of them have never even shown up, then I said, I'm giving a personal estimate of around 10 million.
Mm-hmm.
Then, this is in 94, and we've got it on record and tape, you know, CDs and stuff back then. Colin Ross just put a book out called Project Bluebird, The Purposeful Creation of Multiple Personality Disorder. in which he compiles a ton of, you know, a lot of the information was out there from Journey to Madness, a number of other books and materials. But he also, somewhere, he got a figure of $10 million himself and put it right in his book.
Hmm.
And that's just been out in the last couple of years. So I would say this, though. Even if there's $2 million, who did this
to
two million individuals?
Mm-hmm. That's still a lot.
Well, and most of the ones that are showing up, this is, again, here's the MO of this. Most of them showing up in psych wards and counseling centers and churches now that are seeking the help, that are breaking down and wanting freedom from this stuff. Most of them are in their late 30s, 40s, maybe even the beginning of their 50s. And then you track, again, when it all began with them. All of it began with them in the early 50s as babies and children. Most of them were born in the early 50s, up through 56, 7, whatever. The issue now is it is still going on. They are still creating more of them at baby age, and there's a whole new generation of them coming up. So there's chosen ones in their 20s and in their teens, and the difficulty is almost never come out of the closet until the 30s or in their 40s, because the programming and their human need for freedom begins to, you know, break through. So we have a lot of intact 19-year-olds, 18-year-olds, like we met in Pennsylvania doing a seminar. A 17-year-old girl, Amanda, came full of her grandfather, a Nazi German. This is in Pennsylvania, in Sharpsville, doing a seminar. And it rivets my soul, because we weren't able to get to her completely to get her out. We got a 14-year-old out once and freed from it. And from 14 out, she's never been reprogrammed or whatever else, and she's doing fine to this day. But even if it's a million, it's horrific.
How much of a role do you think that pharmacology plays in this?
Well, look at some of the pharmaceutical companies that come from Germany. Look at the scientists who made some of the psychotropics and some of the drugs that were used. And you got to remember, again, you guys know about Operation Paperclip and everything, and the whole MK Delta, MK Ultra, and all of those different projects where the CIA looked for specific drugs. To either create amnesia in some folks, to break people down, to do all kinds of experimentation. The one from Fort Bragg we had a little black book, and one day she let me look into that little black book, giving numerous names of military people, CIA people, FBI people. She had codes. I mean, she was a cryptologist too. She was expert in that. She could write old languages. She had stuff in there concerning all kinds of chemical stuff. She was very, very aware of drugs and their effect on separate personalities that are linked to specific areas of the brain.
So are you saying that she would take a specific drug, or one of these chosen ones would take a specific drug to activate a specific personality?
Sometimes it took only a specific kind of, well, this one we had, it was always a specific kind of chocolate bar. If they got it, it was an immediate trigger to shut down. But she also told me that it had a chemical connection to help shut down personalities that were trying to talk and get out and say things.
That had never occurred to me that foods could do it too.
Well, and that's again what that's why we, again, observing and watching, and it wasn't with one or two. When we got to 15, 16, 70 in the thousands of hours with them, it was constantly just observing and writing down and watching, or then listening to personalities from this state or that state tell us this is what they use. This is how they do it. There's a book out even not too long ago. I think it's called Toxic Pharmacology or something like that. And it deals with, again, the whole misappropriation and use. I mean, you're talking about billions of dollars industry when it comes to these drugs. They're being pushed on society. But the kind of drugs that she had listed in her little black book, we'd constantly go to these little pill book, these books that we had to look up the uses of them. The police corporal that was high complex cult multiple in engaging her a number of times. What would happen is one personality would go to a place in the house, pull out a needle, inject her in the leg or wherever else with some kind of, you know, whatever it was, which literally put the host person down, and she would be out of it for 10 hours, 12 hours, where the cult loyal and militaristically trained personalities could come out and have free reign, you know, for 10 hours, 12 hours without any interruption.
Oh, my goodness.
I was reading, while reading The Last Circle, Sherry Seymour gets into the CIA's development of programs of this type and talks about the experiments being done with LSD and mescaline back in the 50s. But getting into the 60s, you know, getting into the various delivery systems, a swizzle stick for drinks impregnated with a certain chemical, a needle, aerosol spray, you know, things of that nature being used to deliver drugs like this. And to give an example of how far ahead of where we think science is, they were back then and where they are now. They were working on genetic recombinant DNA genetics back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
For the CIA and the government. And most of the world didn't even become aware of that until, the late 70s, early 80s?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they were at least 20, 25 years ahead. So we're, you know, we think what we think is possible right now is probably about 20 years behind, 25 years behind, where the highest levels of the military and intelligence communities are.
Excellent, excellent, correct. And that's just the issue. We're all looking back, you know, even the literature that's in all those books, you know, many books coming out. Look at the literature. It still goes back 70s, 80s, so forth. Here's the, you know, what we need to do is just, you know, pour out our targeted prayer in every aspect where we think the current stuff is going on. People don't know, and there's no books that are writing about the monarch and majestic minds,
mm-hmm.
That are close to, you know, Quantico and all those places that, you know, or the black berets and the certain insignia that's on the patch with the globe and the lightning bolts and that these guys are wearing. And the way they bring them back in the hundreds for training. And again, you think that they're nothing. You think that they're okay. We did a over-the-phone prayer deliverance with a cult multiple who was a soldier who was in Bosnia at the time.
Mm.
From here to Bosnia.
Oh, my.
And involved this other officer that you know, introduced this person to me and this demonic presence and personalities that was inside this guy. And here he's you'd meet him and think, this is a great soldier. And I don't want to get anybody to think that all soldiers are like this.
No, absolutely not.
You're right. This is some that they've recruited and brought into the projects, and there's the info. They got sleepers planted. This guy's a sleeper. The officer in the law enforcement place was a sleeper, and they have the personalities inside that know. Even on the issue of drugs, I have a sergeant who's in the military. He's a lifer, and his wife's a cult multiple. That's the one I told the story about. That I put my head down writing notes at my desk, you know, and just looked down. I got a bayonet put right past my head stuck into the desk. When she switched and attacked.
Hmm.
Now, this is the person, and this girl multiple, is the one that told me how. They said, "Did you know that there's now substances that we can use, the military has that all they need to do is put a little teeny bit in your tea over a period of time, that'll eventually it builds up in your system and your mind begins to deteriorate and collapse." And this is one of the ways they use to get rid of people. Well, the reason it alarmed me was that part of their infiltration tactics is to identify with everything you do and everything you're about. I like green tea, Arizona green tea.
Mm-hmm.
Not a commercial, but I really like it. I bought some today. But I began noticing that this cult mobile woman that eventually tried to attack and whether to kill me or harm me or whatever, I don't know, but was constantly identifying with everything like that, just like the others did, but constantly bringing me green tea.
Oh.
The weirdest part about it was, in the beginning I started drinking it, and then I got really concerned about, you know what, a part of our principle we teach, I never eat anything or drink anything from anybody that I know is multiple at all, ever, any longer, because of other stories, too, of stuff I can tell you about. But this story was that when I would get the green tea, and they'd show up, you know, we were going to ride motorcycles one day or whatever else, they'd show up, they want to go or whatever, and they always have a green tea for me, for, you know, nice, cold, fresh, I mean, just freezing cold, it was great in the summertime, but I began not to open it. And I can't tell you how many I threw away later, but then I began to notice that when I didn't open it right away, the girl, the woman who was a multiple, began to question me, you know, aren't you going to drink it? Come on, you know. And it was like they would open it and drink it like, come on, drink it. And it was so weird that she got actually angry that I would not eat certain foods that she brought as like little gifts, and specifically the green tea. Now, I can't say that, you know, as far as I know right now, my mind's okay. So I can't say that you've ever done that. Not everybody probably says that about me, but I just, in the Lord, and because of this, I've just seen the same specific, you know, MO that they use, and there's a concern. There is a concern.
I have a question for you. We've been asked by one of our listeners if we're familiar with the Indigo Children. Have you ever heard of them?
Oh, yeah, the Indigo Children. But those, and they've been on the Art Bell and George Norrie Coast to Coast, the person that wrote the book on it. I have it here somewhere in my library down here. I won't even try to look for it right now. But, yeah, the person, the Star Children, similar to the Star Children, yeah, they're the new generation. They give specific, you know, they'll give, there's a couple writers on it, but they give specific indicators of the Indigo Children concerning their spiritual capacities. And, again, you're talking about, they're talking about the coming of a new evolution of humanity.
That's what I've read, and it's always from a very new agey point of view.
Absolutely.
But I was curious how these related to the chosen ones.
Well, it's a great interest to me because the chosen ones were sold in the 50s. I think even the military parents were sold a vision of their children becoming super warriors, highly intelligent, with multiple abilities, and that they would be superhumans. They would have telekinesis and clairvoyance and have abilities and, you know, all these kind of superhuman abilities that the master race people used to talk about, an elevated human. And look again, that this very same mentality is brought up in the Indigo Children, or what some now call the Star Children. Some are talking about the hybrids, the alien issues, but the Indigo Children, this new evolution, this new that they're smarter, that they're more intelligent, that they're more, again, you're right concerning the new age aspect of it.
Are they called indigo because of the rainbow? I mean, would violet children be the most advanced?
Well, you know, like your Indigo watches, the how they glow. Well, there's this idea that behind, I mean, these are again heightened humans. They have a spiritual dimension that is brighter. They're going to stick out. They're going to shine in all of their abilities. Interesting thing would be to engage any of those that they claim they have as Indigo Children and engage them on a spiritual level to test the spiritual presence, power, whatever's in them or on them. But they have some of the same similarities, so maybe we need to look into who these Indigo Children are. Is it a new generation of chosen ones that are still, again, sleepers on the inside? Because now they're saying that they can. There's so many more sophisticated ways in which they're creating them, and the old ways was we can tell by their eyes, what we used to call multiple eyes, and then sitting down with some of them now, some of the programmers that we've dealt with said that we're learning how to cause the newer ones not to show this rapid eye movement or the switch that occurs when personalities switch. They're looking for better ways to conceal their work.
Now stop there. What do you mean when the rapid eye movement when they switch?
Well, in every cult multiple, you have a person, you know, that's there, the host person, the primary person. If you think of all the other personalities as many, many branches and just numerous, you know, branches all inside 100, 200 different personalities, well, certain ones that are the ones that are, you know, the most important or powerful ones or highly trained ones, they're co-conscious. They can look through the same set of eyes at you, observe you, read you, size you up spiritually and everything else, and even do spiritual warfare against you as you're talking to the host person who's not aware what's going on inside of them towards you. Now, if you become aware of that, or you're looking at them and they have this, you get this sense that they're, hey, there's two or three people looking in through their eyes. They all have had this. When we ask for them, and I say, well, I want to talk to Crew, I want to talk to Palantine, I want to talk to Piet. These are different personalities I've talked to in the past with different ones from different places. So when I say I want to talk to one of them that I've met, you will notice that they might blink, close their eyes a few seconds, or whatever. Sometimes they don't even close their eyes. Their eyes and sometimes the contortion of their face will totally change. Even the color of their pupil, their eye, even their color will change.
You've seen that happen?
Oh, hundreds of times.
Wow.
Oh, when in one setting, talking to six separate personalities, and to this very day, after all the hours and all the time, it's still bizarre to me, because when you're talking to one person, say this cop, I'm looking and talking and talking and talking to this person, and then I say, well, let me talk to Piet, or let me talk to Andrew, or let me talk to, you know, and if they allow it. Now, there's been times when I've asked that, and cult loyal personalities will immediately charge up, angry, and you will see through the same body a totally separate, absolutely distinct person. It's bizarre, because you no longer are dealing with the same person.
Have you ever documented any of this, you know, on videotape or
the only videotape we've ever had is when one of them switched personalities when I asked them to, and then they punched me in the face.
Oh.
It was a 6'6" woman out of Meadville, Pennsylvania.
6'6"?
Oh, she was gigantic. And I don't want to say that because
that's tall.
I had a cop there and a staff worker, and this person was the one that had a psychiatrist from Youngstown deem her completely okay to get all of her kids back, because all of her kids were sexually abused and they had personalities too. And the psychologist said that, you know, she's now fine, that social services can give the kids back. She was worried that she still had personalities that would come out and you know, hurt the kids. So she wanted to know from us, is, do I have any other personalities? My thing was, I simply looked at her and I said, well, let's see. You know, we've already prayed this up too. But so when we sat down, I just looked and I said, is there anybody else that I can talk to? And also she goes, uh-oh. And I said, what? She goes, somebody laughed on the inside. So I took the chart that the psychologist made with all the names of personalities, and I came down to one, and this one personality's name was Squirrel. I know it's a strange name, but he was like an 18-year-old rebellious boy. I said, let me talk to Squirrel if he's there still. And boom, the switch occurred in less, you know, a second. Squirrel stood up looking at me saying, what are you doing? You know, you guys shouldn't be here. You guys aren't allowed to be talking to us. You have no privilege in this field. You're not one of us. What are you doing talking to us, whatever else? So we talked for a little bit with Squirrel. I asked him what his job was. His job was to train all the kids in the coven how to perform sexually for funds and money and so forth. And if they didn't do it right, he used a cattle prod. That was his whole job. So I talked to him for a while, and he was very obnoxious. Here you got a 6'6" woman, big woman too, I mean, heavy, heavy woman, and you have a young male voice coming through. And I finally looked at Squirrel, and I said, well, who's underneath you? I see this name, Darkstar. Let me talk to Darkstar. And Squirrel said, no, you don't want to go there. I said, no, I really do. I said, I want, and I just boldly said, because I know how it worked, I want to talk to Darkstar. Well, again, the switch came, the dark, cold, death-looking eyes came out, you know, instantly. And before I can do anything, this person, I mean, just swung with this big old arm. It was like in slow motion. And boom, clocked me on the side of the face. As I turned back to look, they already clocked me a second time.
Wow.
The officer and the other guy just sat there. So the third time when they attempted, I had to stand up, and all we did was set the person down, because it's not the woman. This is a demonized personality. Now, obviously, when the kids came back, these same personalities are going to brutalize them and continue to create new personalities in them and continue the projects.
Right. Well, you mentioned, you know, it's not the woman doing it. It's the personality inside.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the
the cases that get the most publicity in deliverance ministries are the ones where people get hurt. Mm-hmm. There was a case out of Milwaukee some time back, and of course the movie that came out recently, The Exorcism of Emily Rose. In the case of Emily Rose, who's based on a real person, she died. There was a case in Romania earlier this year where a nun who was supposedly possessed was basically physically battered by the priests that were trying to deliver her until she died. Do I understand you correctly that they just weren't doing it properly? They weren't...
Well, yeah, you see, again, dealing, what do we call, they call us normies or singletons. We who have just one personality, the ones that are very sophisticated, they see themselves as spirits, so they call us normies. So when we do a deliverance with a normie or a singleton, it's pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
There might be 2, 3, 4, 5 demons. There's always more than one. But yet it's pretty easy to get that out and get a person, you know, in repentance and how the doorway was open or whatever. The sad thing with the multiplicity is when people during deliverance, they might get out of a personality 2 or 3 demons off and think that they've won the battle. There's 30 other personalities that have stronger demons on the inside they never got to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the case of Emily Rose, and I was brokenhearted when I watched it. People took it, and of course, I get to go to it 2 or 3 times free because people want me to see it and evaluate what
yeah.
it is. It was very sad because the Catholic version of exorcism utterly failed. Demons do not listen to you if you just read books.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do it like Jesus did, is simply the way he did. Sometimes he only used the Greek word ek, and commanded them authoritatively, never touched them. But you don't read to them, you don't do any of that stuff. You just do it just like Jesus did. But the difficulty is that she in the movie never showed how they got in. If you don't find out how they got in, or if there's other personalities with separate demons on them, and you don't know how to get to the system of demons and the mm-hmm. ruling spirit inside, then you will end up spending 10 years getting demons out of 35, 40, 60 different personalities one by one.
Well, not only that, but if you look at Scripture, it's very clear. You can't just clean the house
mm-hmm.
and expect the demons not to come back.
Mm-hmm.
You have
you're
to
right.
have a new lord of that house step in.
You're 100% right. Otherwise, we've seen them return in less than a half hour, and those who were not willing to repent of the areas or to have Christ as Lord in their life or whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
You're correct on that.
Yeah.
And in the cases of the multiples, you got to remember, too, there are personalities that are demonized that have suicide programming that if you get too close or if you are doing deliverance stuff issues and they have ways of shutting down, like the food process you saw there with Emily Rose, not eating. We have one individual that we dealt with here for years, and this is going on with them. They're in another state right now, but this is going on with them, and they almost died a couple of times because inner personalities take control of the eating part, demonized personalities. And it's almost like they're shielded if you're dealing only with the front person. And they want the person, instead of giving the information up, they just as soon kill the person.
Mm-hmm. And bottom line is that whatever you do to that person physically, you know, in form of restraints or whatever, that has nothing at all to do with getting the demons out of the person.
No, and the only reason for those, we've learned over the years that, and we don't even do, you know, 15 years ago, 18 years ago, we used to have the kind where it was knockdown dragouts where we did have. I remember one time we had a Christian biker group, all these big ex-bikers, and I got called in by another pastor saying there's this crazy, demonic, demonized thing, demon speaking. So I got over there. Here it is, a high, sophisticated, chosen one. They're doing deliverance. They're just soaking her face and head with oil, which Jesus never used oil ever in deliverance.
Mm-hmm.
And all they did was get her wet. And
inflammable.
Yeah, and because she would come back after, you know, some of the, and they're yelling. And of course, you've got bikers, big guys, holding down her arms and legs. Because when she switches personalities to male figures, you got to remember the strength issue. You got to remember that they can, and some of them are fighters that can. We've seen them. I have one woman switch to a personality that was very versed in martial arts. Did a roundhouse kick and clocked one of our pastors in the head. But this girl, I mean, some of the biker guys ran out of there. They were like, this is bizarre. We don't know what to do with this. Yeah, they got out of here. But again, it was the issue of we've learned how to command and take authority over not only the demon coming through the particular personality, but the whole system of personalities, so that the body cannot be used to harm itself or to harm anybody else, so that we don't have to use all those restraints. Because what happens is when you begin to do deliverance, even this will occur, a demonic presence will jump from one personality on the inside to another. They might jump to a runner who, if the runner personality pops up, and you're not versed in this, that person will stand up and they will bolt for the door. They'll go through a window. They'll do whatever it takes to get out of there and run from you. And we've never seen anybody catch them when that occurs. We've got them later on when we've called law enforcement to find them. We had a guy that's 300 pounds. This little 98-pound federal officer's wife, when she switched the other personality, I mean, just took him down, put him to the ground, and took off down the street.
Wow.
We had to get cops. So runners, you know, so the demon, you know, that'll occur. So that's why you see in some of these cases, if they're not versed in multiplicity and demonization in that aspect, they may get it to the front person or whatever, but they're not getting to the other personalities that demons will switch to or throw up towards you to either fight you, do whatever else, speak other languages. Not only the demons speak other languages, but the personalities do too.
It's mind-boggling, and it just goes to show that what you see in the newspaper regarding cases like this doesn't scratch the surface of what may be going on behind the scenes.
It doesn't, because I think not only do reporters try to simplify a story, but as readers, we only want a simple story. Don't make this too complicated for us.
Well, and on top of that, there's a presumption in our society that this sort of thing just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Since we discovered psychology, we know that these things just don't happen.
Let me tell you about, the federal officer's wife was sent to Windsor Hospital up here in the Cleveland area. He just said he's got to do something with his wife, so he took her there. And so psychiatrist Mike, that's all I'll say, psychiatrist Mike called me. And he says, now you've been working with this woman for a long time. You know, tell me about her, because, you know, we're just not beginning to work with her, whatever. I said, well, she's got this person, a named personalities and so forth. And I said, she's got one or two that might attack you. This psychiatrist, she didn't last long up there. Because, again, they didn't know where to begin with her. They have no spiritual dimension, no discernment, no authority. They have no understanding. And so the personalities inside, in the sacred side, they're not going to come out. They're going to be buried down, and they're not going to come out and talk to the psychiatrist. In the big picture, they're just not going to do that. Most of the ones we have, all of them that have been in psychiatric centers for 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Moshe Torum, I'll mention his name, out of here at General Hospital here in Akron, works out of St. Thomas too, has information in a book. He's now saying, it's all, you know, don't talk to the personalities because it enforces their delusions. But the same individuals came from his psychiatric ward to us, and we did prayer deliverance and talked to personalities and loved the human side of them. We always have to tell the human side, hey, we're not casting you out, because a lot of the younger personalities are fearful that we're just casting them out into the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to make it very clear, the authority we use only attacks dark spiritual dimensions,
mm-hmm.
Evil presence. And they, on the inside, know the difference between a personality and a dark spirit, a demonic presence.
Mm-hmm.
They know on the inside the difference.
Mm. It's just so hard to conceive of what that must be like as a singleton myself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at this Thanksgiving season, Russ, we're just thankful that you and your team are out there on the front lines. And any time we can do anything to be of service,
right.
Just let us know.
Now, you say you're heading over to Pennsylvania?
We're going there, I think the 10th. We're going to Grove City. And we're meeting with, a Christian group of intercessors and others for the whole state. And we're going to discuss a lot of this stuff. They just wanted to spend hours talking about all of it. And the weird thing about it was, not weird thing, but providential thing to us, was that we were there 6 months ago. We took a team to Grove for the specific reason we had a tip. And so we went onto the college campus. We went to the area, prayer mapped the area, looking for chosen ones or signs of stuff concerning the brotherhood. And when we got to the Christian college, we literally got kicked off by a little crew, and I don't want to go into the depth of it, but I believe he was a chosen one. And we couldn't fathom it because, you know, two of the guys who were there were pastors, and we were permitted on the campus by another officer, but this one particular chosen one, I believe, didn't want us there at all, and not only got us off, but followed us into the town. Now, 6 months later, we got calls from that area. They want us to come in there and do prayer mapping and discuss all this stuff. So we're taking precautions, but we're also going to be there. And then we'll set up a team to go to Lancaster. We've been considering that for some time because of the 6 or 7 cases that have come out of there.
Mm-hmm.
If people want to get in touch with you for more information or to support your ministry, how would they do that?
Well, they can go to the shatterthedarkness.net website. Now, my difficulty is this. The links there of all the information are not working yet. It's going to probably be another week or so before I get those working. They can at least go there and find, you know, a phone number, a physical address, and two separate email addresses, the raisebabylon@AOL.com or the shatterxmail@AOL.com. Either one of those, they can send information to me email-wise, or they can go to the shatterthedarkness.net and get that basic stuff. And then soon they'll have tons of stuff to look at information-wise, too.
Well, you got your hands full.
You really do. Well, you know, is there a way that we can support you other than just prayer? I mean, these trips aren't cheap, you know.
Well, you know, here's our rule in Shatter. You know, when it comes to all the victims and everything, in any of our work, no one's allowed to ever ask for funds at any time. But we've always been willing to accept help and all those kind of things. That's the most I'll say on that.
Okay. Well, if any of our listeners feel so inclined, they can contact you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right. So very good. Well, Rusty
is the amazing Randy. Tell him I said hello.
I don't think he's going to donate to your cause, Russ. Sorry.
No. Russ, we appreciate you spending the time with us today. Russ Dizdar, Shatter the Darkness Ministry. God bless you, sir.
God bless you. Thanks again, Russ. Bye-bye.
Russ Dizdar from the fall of 2005. And interestingly enough, James the Amazing Randy is scheduled to come to Columbia sometime this year to speak as a keynote speaker at the first ever Conference of Brights, which is the cutesy name that atheists want to apply to themselves. So we may get a chance to meet the amazing
can
one himself.
Can we get front row, Steve? You're part of the journalistic...
you know, we probably could.
Yes, I know you. I know you will. The stupendous yappy.
So we'll see what comes of that. They don't have a date planned yet, but they've got all these speakers who are lined up and already supposedly confirmed as speakers, even though they're not sure what dates they're going to be yet. So, but we'll keep you informed about that. In the meanwhile, we continue our series of classic PID next week with another one from the archives. In the meanwhile, hope you have a wonderful week. If you have comments, you can address to us. Send those by email, radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And you can always stop by the forum. It is open 24 hours, 7 hours a day, 365.25 days a year. Until next time.
I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Catherine Adamson thought she was going back to her quiet hometown of Eden, Indiana, to settle the affairs of her late Aunt Celeste. Instead, she discovers that Eden has literally gone to hell. Two high school students have disappeared, leaving behind only a running car and a bloody shoe. Strange lights have appeared over the town, and the fields of a local farm are marked with blackened circles. Eden County Hospital reports record births, incredibly large babies joining the ranks of a growing number of giants. Many of Eden's leading citizens have been hiding evil secrets, but their behavior has been closely watched by the mysterious Dr. Apollo Bell, head of the Mount Hermon Institute. All of Eden is a war camp, and citizens must choose sides in an eternal battle. Catherine is reunited with her old flame, Joshua Carpenter, the publisher of the Eden Chronicle, and they quickly learn their strongest ally may be John Thundercloud, a legless old Winnebago Indian who spends his days writing line after line in a library full of tattered diaries. It's Winds of Evil by Sharon K. Gilbert, book one of the Laodicea Chronicles. Available now online and at bookstores everywhere.
They're coming from the darkness. Over 6,000 years ago, the citizens of Mesopotamia encountered them.
Down through time, tens of thousands of people on every continent of the world have etched their likeness on the walls of caves, chiseled statues of them from solid stone, and prayed prayers to their highest gods to be delivered from them.
But prophecy says they will return, and at a time when Babylon, modern Iraq, and Iran is invaded and destroyed. This spring, exclusively from RaidersNewsUpdate.com, we'll tell you what you need to know about them. In the book-length ebook, Stargates, Ancient Rituals, and Those Invited Through the Portal.